From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Outgoing Republican Congressman Paul Ryan gave his last speech as House Speaker on Wednesday. Ryan expressed regret in failing to gut Social Security and Medicare programs that he refers to as entitlements. He said, "I acknowledge plainly that my ambitions for entitlement reform have outpaced the political reality, and I consider this our greatest unfinished business." Meanwhile, the Trump administration continued its assault on social safety net programs, announcing on Thursday new restrictions on food stamps via a rule change. This after Congress passed a farm bill days ago that did not include proposed cuts. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, provides food assistance to about 12% of the U.S. population. That's 40 million Americans. My guest is Negin Oliai. She is a researcher and editor at inequality.org. She previously worked as a journalist and digital producer at Al Jazeera Media Network. She recently wrote about Paul Ryan's legacy. Welcome to the program, Negin.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's talk about Paul first before we get to the food stamps issue. And in a little bit, I'll play a clip of his speech. Paul Ryan was supposed to be this rising star in the Republican Party, established himself at a very young age, very quickly, as a sort of face of the younger, hipper, smarter Republican Party, and then shocked everybody when he announced that he was not going to be running for re-election for Congress. Forget about being House Speaker. He just wasn't even going to be a member of Congress. How deep is the damage that he did, not just in things that he actually passed, but in the sensibility he brought to Congress, being this devotee of Ayn Rand and others like her?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few things I'd say about that. And one thing is that I don't even think we've tapped the well of what Paul Ryan has done in terms of damaging the way that we see things like what he's called entitlement reforms. You can see that coming through today. You know, he's on his way out, he's leaving, and still you see Trump trying to cut food assistance for millions of Americans. So I hold Paul Ryan partly responsible for all of that, because he's just changed the way that we talk about programs that are vital for people in this country, like Medicare, like Medicaid, like SNAP benefits, all while doing his best to make sure that the wealthy get the biggest handout they possibly can. And I like to think that this new kind of insurgent House progressive movement is going to undo some of that damage. But it's up to us to have an honest reckoning with what his legacy has been.
So Paul Ryan's in the speech that he gave, he talked about his failure to pass cuts to Social Security and Medicare. He's of course not the only member of the Republican Party to push this line. He is one of quite a few, but he was and has been one of the most aggressive in doing so. And I'm wondering if you think that when he says unfinished business, or to paraphrase him, he means that that step one was passing that tax reform bill that essentially defunds a big chunk of our treasury, and then cutting social safety net programs because now there's not enough money for them because we passed tax reform. So that part two hasn't come to fruition.
Yeah, and you can see this. I mean, as soon as the tax bill was passed last year, they talked about cutting Social Security money and cutting Medicare and Medicaid. I just think at the same time that it's not as politically feasible as they want it to be, and people are starting to wake up to the reality of what this conservative plan of action actually is. So they know it's not politically possible to cut healthcare for Americans and still look like a reasonable party. You could see this when they were talking about enacting the Obamacare repeal, and you had people lining up in the halls of Congress just chanting, and people in wheelchairs being dragged out, and you could just see the complete callousness on behalf of, I would say, pretty much all of the Republican Party during that moment of time. They have a lot to reckon with, and one of the things that Paul Ryan excelled in doing was wrapping this kind of these horrific policies, these violent policies, in this wonky language, like allowed him to get away with that. And it's up to us again to see through that language. It's up to the political reporters who kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt for many years to make sure that we talk about the impact these policies have on people.
And it's interesting because I don't know if it's because of his youthfulness, but he seemed to bring this bizarre mask of moderation to his harsh policies compared to his much older colleagues in Congress, in the Senate and the House. And really, he was perhaps even more hawkish than many on wanting to pass these cuts. I want to play for you and our audience a clip of the sort of syrupy part of his speech on Wednesday. This was his last speech as House Speaker, where he appeared to express great optimism and spoke in superlatives that were, sort of grammatically correct versions of the kinds of things Trump says. Here is Paul Ryan.
To everything, there is a season, and for me, this season of service is coming to a close. I have had the chance to do something that I love so much for so long, to do my small part to advance the American idea. And I leave as I came here, an optimist to the core. I wouldn't have it any other way. Nothing is impossible if you are willing to go out and fight for it. If nothing else, I simply ask you to remember one thing. We are each part of a larger story, a greater cause. And what we have here is a miracle. It really is. And this miracle has made us the most free and the most prosperous nation on earth ever. Cherish that. Marvel at that. Always dream big. Always raise your gaze. For just as remarkable as what we have achieved is what we have the capacity to do still. So here's to the people. Here's to the people's house. Here's to possibilities. Thank you for everything. God bless America.
And that's Paul Ryan giving his farewell speech on Wednesday at the House as House Speaker. Nagin, I choose to take from what he said a couple of things. He said, dream big. Nothing is impossible if you're willing to go out and fight for it. It feels like those should be really great inspirational words for progressives needing to fight Paul Ryan's agenda. If we have half the aggression and determination that he did, being on the right side of issues, lowercase r, right side of issues, we might do so much more than Paul Ryan, than the damage Paul Ryan could do.
Yeah, just to add to that, he says that there's so much left to accomplish. I hope that none of the things he wants to accomplish ever get done. And it's up to us to make sure that his reality actually is impossible. These things that he's done, they're totally unpopular. The tax cuts were, unpopular by a 2-to-1 margin. And something like SNAP benefits, which are popular, this tax cut, it's funding the cutting of actually popular programs. And so it's up to us to make sure that message gets through to the conservatives. We will not let you get away with this. And I think that progressives have been doing a great job fighting for that message. And it's time to make sure that people can't couch their cruelty in this kind of wonky language, this kind of syrupy speak that we saw from his farewell address.
One of the things that you referred to when you wrote your piece about Paul Ryan's legacy was the way in which he offered up these very cruel ways to describe what struggling Americans are going through, and that his cruelty seemed to know no bounds. Can you share with us that example that he what he said in 2014, arguing against the free school lunch program?
And I should be clear that he gave this speech at CPAC, and he was arguing about far more than a school
Conservative
lunch
Political Action Committee, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So he's speaking to his fellow conservatives, and what he's saying basically is that the left and people to the left of him, which is pretty much everyone, hopefully, they're offering full stomachs but empty souls. And I want to get into a little bit about how, what was going on in that particular moment. It's the 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty, and he's going on this like 2014 poverty tour that is, the entire thing is basically just like talking about how there's a culture of laziness. He got into some trouble for using dog whistle phrases like, there's a no working culture in our inner cities, right after citing Charles Murray. So we know what, we know what his intentions were. We know that he has this kind of this attack that's going specifically to poor people, to people of color in this country. So for him to say something like, you know, empty souls but full bellies. That basically means that he doesn't really care if Americans are eating. He just wants to make sure that he can get his tax cuts passed. He wants to make sure he can cut entitlement reform. Another anecdote that I mentioned in the article is that he talked about dreaming to cut Medicaid funding and Medicare funding when he was in college drinking out of a keg. Who does that? You know, like, that's just such a cruel, who thinks that way? Who is sitting there at a kegger thinking like, yes, I can't wait to make sure that poor people don't have healthcare. So for us to think that he is, you know, this like wonky academic person who has something to offer, for the people who are kind of fooled into thinking that, you know, we have a lot of moments where we can kind of see the little mask slip and we can see how cruel he actually is.
We were also led to believe that Ryan was going to be or is a much more reasonable counter to Trump. When Trump came into office, people like Paul Ryan were sort of held up as, curb some of the president's worst instincts. How did the Paul Ryan Donald Trump relationship play out over the last couple of years in terms of Ryan failing to stand up to Trump and just basically in general capitulating to his cruelty?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't cite a single time when I think that he's done something that actually does stand up to Donald Trump. There's a couple examples that people will always cite when saying that, you know, he's going to be a good check, like we have this great speaker. I mean, people on the right, I will say, I don't think that anyone even close to center left or beyond that had any faith in Paul Ryan doing such a thing. But they'll say, you know, he's called some of his policies racist, but then he obviously, as soon as Trump tries to pass them or as soon as, you know, these things enter any kind of like national debate that makes them a political reality, Paul Ryan all of a sudden falls right into line and he's all about it. We could see this with the Muslim ban. We could see this by the way that in the wake of the Charlottesville attack and the protests from the Unite the Right, when Heather Heyer was killed, he said, you know, Trump's heart's in the right place. Who actually thinks that Trump's heart's in the right place? And who is saying, you know, why would he say this? And it's just to get his already admittedly cruel agenda passed too. So there's really no, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that Paul Ryan has been almost like a cover for Trump's fascism. And I think that's completely true.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the newly elected New York representative, made a really interesting point recently. She said, she called out what she saw as double standards are Paul Ryan being elected at age 28 and immediately being given the benefit of his ill-considered policies, considered genius, and me when a primary at 28 to immediately be treated with suspicion and scrutinized down to my clothing of being a fraud. I thought that was a really interesting point that she made, because you have these younger, incredibly progressive members of Congress, incoming members of Congress coming in. And when Paul Ryan, at that same age as Ocasio-Cortez, came in, yeah, he was hailed even by some of the liberal media as some kind of boy genius and romanticized. I think there was some magazine cover he appeared on lifting weights.
Yes, and I mean, you saw this really when he was running for, he was on Mitt Romney's ticket in 2012. Everyone thought he's like the future of the Republican Party. There's one anecdote that I also want to share when it comes to this that I included in this article. In 2012, when a Democratic Political Action Committee was kind of doing some polling around Paul Ryan's proposed budget plan, people literally could not believe that this was something that people were suggesting, you know, cut taxes for the rich and then cut crucial programs like Medicare and Medicaid. So I just think it's, again, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is exactly right. There's a double standard. People, because she wants to do things like help her constituents rather than help the business interests that are, you know, funding like someone like Ryan, people automatically look at her with a little bit more shade than she should be getting. And then Paul Ryan can sneak away just doing absolutely the least amount of work. And, you know, even by his own standards, one of the things I talk about in the article is that, you know, by his own standards, the deficit has gone up, even though it's supposedly one of the things that he cares about the most. He's a failure. So it is absolutely a double standard.
And, you know, we should have certainly acknowledged white male privilege in the way in which he might be, he had been treated versus women like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Let's talk about the issue of the cuts to the food stamps. So the farm bill that I mentioned that was passed a few days ago by both houses of Congress was a compromise bill. And there were very steep proposed cuts to the food stamp program that eventually didn't make it in. Progressives hailed that as, you know, a small victory. Now you have these cuts or some version of these cuts being introduced as a rule change. As far as you can tell, what exactly is Trump proposing in cuts to food stamps, and can he get away with it?
Well, so what he wants to do is he wants to strengthen the work requirement, strengthen already existing work requirements for the SNAP benefits. And one thing that I'd like to cite is that, you know, this has been one of the ways that people like Ryan and people like Trump have gone around getting their war on poverty done. So, for example, you can see this happening with Medicaid. They've pushed for work requirements in states like Arkansas. And a recent report came out saying that 17,000 people in Arkansas did lose their, they were not eligible for Medicaid due to these kind of ridiculous work requirements that were put in place. And some of the ways that they do that is by just adding tons of red tape so that it makes it more difficult for you to get things like, you know, healthcare coverage that you should be getting in the first place. So people who do actually even meet these requirements are getting turned down due to something like not having, not submitting the right kind of form or not having the internet access to get this thing submitted. So it's just adding more bureaucracy and red tape for the people who could actually use the most help in this country.
So this particular approach that the Trump administration has taken, how likely is it to survive, the Democratic House? I'm assuming one would hope that they would take on this issue and stop this, given how many people rely on food stamps. And, you know, just so doubly cruel for this to come just a few days before Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can see, and again, this is this whole idea of just doing things just to be cruel. I think it really, you know, we've seen this with Trump, and I think it goes back many, many years. And I'd just like to point out that the reason why this happened had to happen through a rule change is because it's so unpopular with people, even politicians, that they knew it couldn't get passed through Congress. So yeah, I really do hope to see more action around this. And I think it's going to be, you know, hopefully something that is politically devastating for people who continue to align themselves with Trump.
So what do you think now can be done in the House with the likely incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is going to be replacing Paul Ryan? Do you hope that somebody like Pelosi could be as effective as Ryan was in terms of rhetoric and using the bully pulpit of that position to push a progressive agenda as opposed to the regressive one that Ryan pushed? He, under the Trump years, may not have achieved much, but he certainly has succeeded in changing the culture, you know, even just the language that we use, entitlement programs instead of earned benefits, for example.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of things that I want to in terms of that, but I think she could take a lesson from Paul Ryan on. When I mentioned that 2014 poverty tour, Ryan did hold some hearings to talk about the issue of poverty in the United States. And the actual lives of poor people were not very well represented in those hearings. Surprise, surprise, to no one. I mean, they're basically just another way for him to couch his cruelty in something that looks like, you know, masquerading as some kind of concern for the poor. And so I think that that's what the House should be doing, is they should be making sure that the people who are impacted by policies are front and center whenever we describe them, whenever we talk about our new plans, whenever we are crafting this agenda. It's on her and it's on the people in the House to make sure that the people who are affected by them are in the room and that they're talking and that it's their ideas that are being heard. And I do have hope that that can happen.
And again, where can people learn more about the work that you do?
Yes, I would love to direct everyone to inequality.org. It's our online portal for all things related to economic inequality. I'm one of the editors, along with several other people who are focused on the issues of taxes, programs like the SNAP benefits, and making sure that everyone kind of gets the best use of our government.
And any brief thoughts on the prospects for a government shutdown? By the way, you and I are talking at a time when Trump is still, quote, undecided on whether to sign the Senate compromise bill that would be just a temporary spending bill.
Well, I'll just leave you with one last thought about how much Paul Ryan is just a truly cruel person. He announced this news by saying that, you know, Donald Trump wants to shut down the government over what he calls crucial border security concerns. We all know that's not the case. And again, it's another way to throw immigrants, people of color under the bus and make sure that he gets his way.
Right. I mean, he literally has nothing left to lose as he's leaving Congress and he's still is supporting Trump's agenda in that way. Nagin, thank you so much for joining us and appreciate it. I'm sure we'll have you back on our program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Negin Oliai is a researcher and editor at inequality.org. She previously worked as a journalist and digital producer at Al Jazeera Media Network. We've been discussing Paul Ryan's legacy, as well as Trump's cuts, proposed cuts to food stamps. We'll post a link to the article that Negin wrote from our website, which is risingupwithsonali.com. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. You can also sign up for our daily newsletter on our website and subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes and our video channel on Vimeo.